The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
The final hour of the week has arrived, and we appreciate all of you for being here. It's been a fabulous show, and it's not over yet. Chris Doering joining us for his regular Friday afternoon appearance. And Chris, thanks for the time as always. Let's start where you played and where you live in Gainesville. Missouri comes to town. It's been a while, a long time, 3 weeks since we've seen the Gators. What's your sense of where that program is right now?
I have no idea, Paul. I mean, it really is the weirdest thing. The feel of what Gainesville is like right now, anticipation about a game, but it's almost like a new season starting all over again. You wonder if the offense is going to be able to keep the rhythm that it was in. It was playing at a really high level. Kyle Trask obviously having a great feel with his receivers, and Kyle Pitts maybe being one of the best receivers in the country right now. You wonder if that rhythm's going to keep up. And then on the other side of the coin, maybe the time off was good for Todd Grantham and his defense. You get a chance to get Kyrie Campbell back on the interior of your defensive line. That's been the big deficiency for Florida's defense as a whole. But this is a defense that is way too good to play, or at least talent-wise, returning experience talent-wise, way too good to be playing at the level they're playing at now. So I'd love to tell you I got a feel for them, but to be honest with you, this could go one of many different ways, including Missouri coming into the Swamp and knocking the Gators off.
Chris, when you're out for a couple weeks, and usually it's for an injury, what's it like to come back when you haven't?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Really done very much in almost a month.
It is difficult. I mean, I can tell you as a former receiver, you know, not having the opportunity to create that rhythm with your quarterback, the timing that's important in the passing game, that's one thing that I'll keep my eye on, is how in sync is Kyle Trask with his receivers. But really just from the conditioning standpoint as well, you can do as much as you'd like to on your own to try to get yourself in shape, but there's nothing like playing football. There's nothing like the contact and being able to get back to the huddle, the 4 or 5 seconds each play takes. So I think that's the other thing that I look for as you get into the late third, early fourth quarter, is just how well Florida's conditioned or deconditioned after being off as long as they were, and depending on guys to do their things individually. Like, we know some guys are going to get after it, and other guys are probably sitting home playing video games. So anxious to see that conditioning level in the fourth quarter.
You certainly have drawn a lot of attention here with some of your predictions, so we'll hit a few locales. We'll start in Texas, where Arkansas fans think they have a really good shot after 8 losses in a row to the Aggies. What happens here?
You know, it is amazing to think about, because if you look at the rosters, A&M's a double-digit better team than what Arkansas is right now. That's not taking anything away from the Hogs and what they've done. I think they've created a fun environment where guys know what they're doing and they execute very cleanly. Defensively, they're very physical. They fly around and do what they're supposed to do on that side of the ball. But the thing to me is that I look at Texas A&M, they're starting to develop an identity of who they are. I thought against Florida in the second half when they decided to just run the football and put that game on the shoulders of their offensive line, Anaya Smith and Isaiah Spiller, that they figured out that this is their best way to win. And then all of a sudden they come out against Mississippi State and they regress. So the one thing that scares me about really getting fired up about A&M is the lack of consistency that we've seen from them over the years, and particularly the lack of consistency of Kellen Mond. But I do believe that this is a game that A&M will win, but we come to expect a lot of craziness in this series. So I think it's going to be a close game into the fourth quarter, and A&M finds a way to pull it out, but only by a narrow couple points.
I know you'll be glued as all of us tomorrow afternoon in Auburn, because we have two teams that are I have to be careful how I describe them, but because they have had such a peculiar season, both LSU and Auburn. What gives on the Plains?
You know, Paul, this will be the first time that I've come onto your show here on a Friday and actually picked Auburn, and it really was not clear cut for me. But when I went back and watched the tape, it comes down to a couple different things. One, now having some film on T.J. Finley, knowing what that LSU offense is going to look like with him at the quarterback position, I think that the Auburn defense will have a plan. I mean, think back to last year. The best plan for stopping that prolific, historic offense that LSU had was put together by Kevin Steele. This is a much different offense that LSU rolls into Jordan-Hare. I think Kevin Steele will have a great plan for him. And then on the other side, it comes down to this. Which improvement from last week do we trust more? Do we trust the improvement of the defense of LSU, or do we trust the improvement of the offense for Auburn? I watched the tape of that LSU-South Carolina game. There still is a lot of deficiencies in the secondary. They have a hard time setting the edge. I mean, if you look at South Carolina's success running the football, it was on the perimeter. And so one thing that I saw that Auburn did really well last week against Ole Miss was in that gap scheme, doing a great job of moving guys, getting to the edges, and creating big runs by Tank Bigsby. So I think it's going to be a close game, but I actually am picking Auburn here just because I trust that offense's improvement a little bit more than what I saw from LSU's defense on tape.
Is it more frustrating when you pick Auburn to lose and it looks like they are about to and then an officiating call overturns it? What's it like as you're watching that?
That's twice this season, right, Paul? I mean, two times this season I picked updates and everybody, upsets, and everybody thought that I was crazy for going with the Hogs the first time around, and then last week for going with Ole Miss. And then literally I'm invested emotionally. My reputation's on the line, and to see it go down at the hands of the officiating it's definitely been frustrating. So I don't know about the continuing luck that Auburn has had. I have to believe at some point in time that comes to an end. But I'm riding the Tigers this week, not because of the luck factor, but because I think they can actually do more to win this game on their own.
Another erratic team has been Kentucky, because they've had so many impressive performances, even in defeat against Auburn, and the complete and total evisceration of Tennessee, and then they give a lot of it away last week at Missouri. What happens tomorrow in Athens?
That's been the story of the season this year in the SEC, right? I mean, we start to feel good about South Carolina, and they lay an egg last week against LSU. Feeling really good about Kentucky after leaving Knoxville and breaking that historic losing streak there, and they looked absolutely miserable. And again, going back and watching tape, they've become so one-dimensional. Their inability to throw the football has allowed defenses to scheme, you know, hey, we're going to stop the run. We're going to put guys in every single gap. We're going to play single high safety about 9 yards from the line of scrimmage. And we're going to play man coverage on your receivers because we know they can't separate. And if they do separate, they're probably going to drop the ball. Or if they throw the football, it might be inaccurate because the quarterbacks haven't been able to throw with much accuracy this year. So I expect this is probably the worst team that you could possibly go into a game being one-dimensional against, as Georgia's defense is incredibly physical, incredibly sound up front. And I don't think that this is a game that Kentucky all of a sudden decides that they know how to throw the football again. I really think, Paul, that last year having to go to the offense they did with Lynn Bowden really hurt the development of the receivers. And right now I just don't see a lot of guys that have impressed me to this point in time. So I do think this is going to be a game that Georgia's able to dominate. And I think one of the worst parts about it, and listening to Coach Stoops after the game last week, was him lamenting the fact that they were out physical on both lines of scrimmage. That is not something we're typically hearing from Kentucky Coach Stoops' team, and it's going to happen again this week against Georgia.
Do you have any insight as state heads to Alabama what's going on in Starkville? Because it's hard to keep up with that program from a distance.
You know, it's the same kind of stuff that we saw when Mike Leach went to Washington State and went to Texas Tech. I mean, there's been an exodus at both of those places and struggles in year number one at both of those places. And quite honestly, it's as a result of the weird offseason, Paul. All of this would have transpired in May, June, and July, after you get out of spring practice, after guys realize that maybe this isn't a great fit for me from a scheme standpoint, maybe it's not a great personality match for me with the coaches, or maybe I just if I find myself in the two deep or three deep buried further than I want. And so I think a lot of these guys would have transferred had we had a normal offseason with spring practice, with summer conditioning, and we wouldn't be dealing with it right now. But I think the worst part about it is occurring during the middle of the season. So it only further magnifies the defections, and especially when it's your best player on the team. Like, I never understood why he came back to begin with. It was going to be a weird match with a new coaching staff that he didn't know in an offense that's really not designed for rushing the football and having a lot of success that way. I was surprised after game number one when Kylin Hill caught over 100-something yards receiving and looked like he really embraced that role as a receiver out of the backfield. But clearly the thing got off track, and right now I think you're seeing a natural purge that's taking place at a little weirder time in the schedule than we typically would see it.
And finally, the issue of Waddle. He's out for the season. Everyone has a varying opinion on how badly Alabama will be hurt, especially in the most critically important games of the year. What about you?
Paul, I got to be honest with you, man. As I watched that on Saturday, it deeply hurt me. This was one of my favorite guys in the league the last couple years. I really expected a big season from him. I picked him to be my Heisman Trophy winner from the conference in the preseason, having a tremendous year. And this is a guy that not only is productive on the field, but is a guy that looks like he really enjoys playing football. And so to see him for the second year in a row, you know, watching one of the Alabama greats being carted off the field. Those are the last time we're going to see. We saw Tua Tagovailoa playing in the league, getting injured against Mississippi State. This is the last time we're most likely going to see Jalen Waddle in an Alabama uniform, and it makes me sad. So I don't think they missed the production as much because they've recruited really well at every single position, and I thought Slade Bolden stepped in and performed nicely after really not getting those reps during practice. Six catches, almost 100 yards receiving. But I think they missed what he brings to that locker room, a guy that's largely popular amongst the Alabama football team, a guy that brings leadership in the way that he practices, the way that he performs on Saturdays. And so it'll be a loss in that respect, but I don't buy the old story that everybody's preaching about Alabama's out of the college playoff mix now because of losing one player. They've got enough talent everywhere. They're coached by the greatest of all time. They'll overcome it, but we'll certainly miss watching number 17 on Saturdays.
Well done, as always, Chris Dorian joining us. We will see you next week. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Paul.
Have a great weekend. And you got it. We'll take a break. We still have another Chris coming up, Chris Fowler. Been a busy show with the former commissioner, Roy Kramer, and Gus Malzahn, and your phone calls coming up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back on a Friday afternoon, Dennis is up next in Oregon. Hey, Dennis, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I haven't called in a while.
Thank you.
I'm an 89-year-old Mizzou fan.
Oh, sure.
In Oregon now.
Well, it's great to have you.
I go to the health club in the morning, and I come home, eat lunch, and then I watch your program from start to finish.
Thank you.
And I never cease to be amazed at how articulate and good analysts are. Your analytical guys, Black Radio and Kubelis, and I feed on those guys because they really let you know what's going on. And, I appreciate your program. When I go to the health club, I brag on Mizzou a lot, but I've got a lot of nostalgia from back there. I roomed with the Mizzou quarterback for 2 years.
Oh, really?
And I was good friends with Don Ferrose about it. So that's why it was the best 4 years of my life at Columbia. And the college life is just wonderful. I met my wife there, and she's raised my four boys. And anyway, all is good. And I really enjoy your program.
Well, Dennis, thank you for saying that. And all the best to you and hopefully continued good health. And I think what he said there is so interesting. And thank you very much. You know, why do we spend so much time talking about our school or our favorite team? And because it really is an important part of our lives. And I think Dennis brought it home to us so clearly there. And thank you very much for that, Dennis. How many of us think back to our college time as the absolute apex of our life. I mean, maybe I'm sure some will criticize us for saying that, but for many people, those were the greatest 4 or 5 years, or in some people's cases, 6 or 7 or 8. Mike is up next in Michigan. Hey, Mike, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how are you, buddy?
We are doing great.
Hey, last time I talked to you was about 4 years ago when we talked about the satellite camps.
Oh, right. That was a big story. Very big.
Yeah, right. Well, we're not going to talk about that today. But I was calling to talk about Augie, you know, saying don't visit the state of Michigan. You don't really see a lot when you land in an airport. Michigan does have a lot of good things up here. So you can't really talk about a state if you've never really been here, except being at an airport.
No, I've been to Detroit, and I was struck by how nice it was after, you know, hearing all the criticism for so long.
Well, you know, we're trying. We're rebuilding the city. It's starting to look better. So
the one place I've never been, and I have an old friend who hangs out there in the summertime, is the Upper Peninsula. I've been told that is fabulous.
That's where you really want to go. Up north is just beautiful. You know, you hear it will blow your mind when you go up there. It's just unreal what you see up there. So you need to at least take a visit up to the Upper Peninsula if you do get an opportunity. But tell Augie he can just stay where he's at.
Well, listen, Augie's in New Orleans, and we all know that there is no place in the world like that, right?
Right, true, and I would like to get down there, you know, besides seeing their airport, you know what I mean?
Well, I was in New Orleans a couple of months ago, and I will tell you, no matter how many times I've been there, and I've been there a million, it is always exciting, in spite of all the criticism that it gets. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Leanne is up next in Birmingham. Leanne, thank you very much. Welcome to the show. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much. Paul, I wanted to just tell you a quick story, and I will preface it by saying that I do enjoy listening to your show. As maddening as it is sometimes, I listen to it kind of in honor and memory of my dad, who was an avid daily listener.
Oh, wow.
Of yours for many, many years, and big Auburn fan, and about 17 years ago, he picked my girls up from school every day, who are now 23 and 25. So he picked them up from school, and he was always wanting to be first in the carpool line, so he would get there and turn your show on and listen to it. So every day when they got in the car, it was on. And they always said, oh, Pop, do we have to listen to this?
That's great.
He gives me a headache. So a few months later, my mom had those same girls in Homewood. You had come out of Shea's one day. We're walking down the sidewalk, and Mother said hello to you and said, I want to introduce you to my precious granddaughters. And she said, girls, this is Paul Feinbaum. And my 6.5-year-old said, looked right at you and said, oh, you give me a headache. And your answer was, I get that from a lot of people. They love to tell that story. They love when I tell them that I'm listening to you on a daily basis in honor of Pop. And they love, and I told them, one day I'm going to call in, and if I get on, I'm going to tell them that you have been giving people headaches for many, many years. And yet we keep coming back to talk to you and to listen to what you have to say. So I just want
Well, Leanne, before you go, first of all, I can't tell you how much it means that you mentioned your father. And as I have moved on through this career, stories like that mean so much, because you really don't stop when you're doing this to think about other than you don't think about the effect. You just think about doing the show every day. But your story about your daughters is unbelievable. I always joke to people, and my bosses always tell me, I always say, when somebody comes up to me and says, I listen to you every day, and I'm like, how could you possibly do that? Because
agreed. I know.
I always wonder, would I listen to this? And I say that because I'm really not a big sports talk fan. I really don't listen to
it.
So I think the answer would be I probably wouldn't listen to it.
Right. One other quick story about my dad. His proudest moment, and I can tell you, and dads love to have proud moments with their children. Years ago, Auburn had beat Alabama for the first time in however many years. It was when they first went to Jordan-Hare.
Right.
And all the Alabama fans were calling in and just being so patronizing as far as Auburn did a great job and we just, you know, it was a great day and all this. And my brother called in and was talking to you, and I was on hold. And you talked to him, and his comment was, we don't need those stinking Alabama fans validating our win. And I'm sitting there in the car saying, that's what I'm going to say. So I got on the call. The very next call was me. And I said, that was my brother that just hung up, and I agree wholeheartedly. I'm going to tell you, it almost brought my father to tears. He was so proud that we had both gotten on your show.
Oh, my goodness. what you're really making me do, Leanne, is miss Birmingham even more, both with these stories.
Man. Well, and one other quick aside, you married a girl I went to high school with.
Oh, really? Homewood?
I did. I graduated a year behind Linda.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, I will tell her, and that means so much. I can't. This whole conversation has overwhelmed me. I know you talked about your dad tearing up, but I'm pretty close to it myself.
Well, I am too. If I don't hang up right now, it might get ugly.
Well, Leanne,
so,
thank you,
and
I hope we meet again very soon. Thank you for the call. Thanks to everything.
And a hearty War Eagle for my dad.
Well, a War Eagle back to him. Hey, thank you, and I hope he's listening in heaven. We'll take a break.
Thanks, Paul.
Good. Thank you. We appreciate it. We're up against a break. More to come on the program, including a conversation with Chris Fowler, and more of your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back, still time for you to get in at 855-242-7285. It's been a busy, busy program. We had Commissioner Kramer on earlier, Coach Malzahn. We went to Tuscaloosa and talked to Todd Blackledge. And we're really looking forward to our final guest of the week. Because he's only calling the biggest game of the day tomorrow, and it's always a pleasure for me to welcome Chris Fowler to the program. Chris, welcome. Always good to have you on. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. Yeah, I'm making my way to the airport, heading over to the short trip to Happy Valley, and wish there was going to be 100,000 folks dressed in white. It's going to be bizarre. I've had the honor of broadcasting that whiteout game the last few years, and there is, unfortunately, no bigger gap between what would have, should have been versus what will be, I think, than that atmosphere. It's my favorite sort of annual atmosphere in college football. And as it is, it's probably worth about a touchdown to Penn State that they're going to need all the help they can get. So it's a different dynamic and something that Ohio State won't have to worry about.
I wanted to ask you about that because I was passing through Philly 2 years ago from Connecticut after this game, and I sat with a bunch of Ohio State fans, and they begrudgingly said that they have never been any place quite like it. You've done the game a number of times. And I know you've described it on the air, but what's it like to feel that place on a Saturday night with the big rival coming in?
It's just a massive display of unity as symbolized by the monochromatic look. It sprang from a student section only thing. It was pretty organic. And then it grew to the all stadium. They slowly worked it up, and they didn't force it on anyone. The regular fans kind of came to it and said, wait a minute, we want to do this. The students are having fun. We want to be a part of it. So they began to sort of grow it. And, it doesn't mean Penn State's won every time on whiteout, but I think to feel that energy is really cool. And I think, the director of the show loves it because it's the most photogenic scene, right? You can do a blackout. You can do a maroon out. You can do whatever out. But the white on a night game from above and just when you're in the stadium is just spectacular.
Chris, you've seen a lot already. I know the Big Ten just started, but in watching college football this year, what was your takeaway, having done a Big Ten game last week, on their re-entry into the scene? They certainly bring a lot, and Michigan especially, which you saw, looked pretty good.
Michigan surprised me. I don't think they're elite, Paul. I think there's still a significant gap. And if Ohio State takes care of business, like most think they will, it'll reinforce the idea that they're far and away the best in the conference again, especially with the problems Wisconsin is having. And that's unfortunate because I don't think we need another top-heavy conference. I mean, there's the growing idea that, sure, Alabama is beatable, but they look like clearly the best in the SEC. Clemson, even without Lawrence this week, clearly the best in the ACC. And I think if Ohio State thumps Penn State, it'll reinforce the idea that they are far and away the best. Their schedule doesn't present them with a whole lot of challenges, unless you think maybe a road game in Indiana. They have Michigan at home. I mean, they'd be heavily favored to roll through undefeated if they can get out of Happy Valley. So my sense is there's still a very top-heavy sport at the moment. I wish there were more contenders. I wish there were more wide-open conference races, but wishing doesn't make it happen. There's such a concentration of the talent pool at these teams that are atop their conferences right now, and I just think the Big Ten is part of that too. Michigan did impress me. They were better than I thought at the offensive line. Milton was a good game manager. Their defense is the same. I don't think they can beat Ohio State, but it's nice to have, you know, Michigan, you know, in the hunt and contending, I think.
Chris, which brings us to the story of the last 24 hours, and that's Trevor Lawrence, and we don't know really what the next week will bring, but having seen them and knowing that story about as well as anybody in terms of the Trevor Lawrence experience at Clemson, just your thoughts on what we know and what we don't know right now.
Well, there's a lot I don't know about the situation. I you know, you always hope initially it'll be a situation like Nick Saban's, where it's a false positive, but as days pass and it seems like that's not what's going on. You know, you just wish him the best and a quick recovery. Most people his age and his health will do fine. But the bottom line is this season is fragile. No team is immune. You can help lower the risk by having a rock-solid organization that reinforces with their players. But I've said this, Paul, maybe you've even talked about it on the show. Ever since I saw what's going on in college towns, I've known the only way to keep this sport afloat and keep the players healthy is to put them in their own semi-bubble. They simply cannot mix with the regular students who don't have the same priorities, who are not being very cautious at all based on what I've seen. And, you know, cases are up all over the place at campuses. Players got to stay away from that. They really are living in isolation. You talk to Justin Fields, you know, he goes from the complex, he goes home where he plays with his dog and walks the dog once a day. Otherwise, he just stays in his apartment. Very, very little socializing. Other players are like that, too. They're almost viewing it as a two-month, I don't want to say sentence, because it's not a sentence, but they're just taking it a day by time and just trying to get through another week healthy. So it's a mindset we've never seen before in the sport. It can't be any fun. It's got to be stressful. But it is what it is, and it's the only way to keep a roster together and make it through this season. Because, I mean, do you think the positive tests are finished? Do you think that the canceled games are done? I think it's going to continue, unfortunately.
Chris, you alluded to it, and you know, you see the pictures, but you're on college campuses every weekend. How bad is it?
Well, I mean, look, I got a shock when I went to Athens, Georgia, because I hadn't been a place where COVID isn't viewed as real. Okay? And you know, I know the players are doing their best, but students were lined up on a Friday night outside bars just like it's 2019 or 1999, and not much acknowledgement of what's going on. You know, there's just blatant like defying of the local ordinances. I'm not here to preach or be a cop on the mask issue. I mean, I think people have pretty much decided that on their own by now, but I just think that for players, it's a dangerous environment to mix with anybody that doesn't have the same priorities they do, because the cases will happen for sure. And they just got to take charge. I really worry down the stretch, not to be gloomy about it, but once a team loses a couple of games, Paul, and their goals are shot and they're not quite on the same page as these teams that are contending, what happens if you get spikes? You get these games that are more no contest games, as they call them. Now Ohio State can't play Illinois or somebody else down the stretch. And the same goes for teams in the SEC or Clemson, whatever. Now you've got a problem where a bunch of teams are playing 6, 7, 8 games or less, you know, and now you really are getting into a mess when you try to evaluate and have a proper postseason, right?
Before you go, I'm curious because, you know, the Pac-12 finally gets on board. next week. I know you do games out there quite a bit.
We're actually heading out there for the opening weekend. We're going to see Stanford, Oregon next week.
What do you hear from your friends and coaches out there in terms of, because I mean, it's hard to know what to expect.
Well, they're grateful to have a season. I mean, they're the last to join the party, so they've seen everything that's gone on. The Big Ten told me they had learned some things from what they've seen at other conferences. The Pac-12's had a lot of time to learn, but it's a sprint, man. It's a sprint, and I don't even think you can worry about the postseason and those kind of guys. I think you just got to – look, there's going to be a champion in the conference. You could focus on winning that, but I think they're really hungry and eager to play. I think it looked pretty grim for all the players out there for a long time. It's sort of another version of what we've heard from Big Ten players. So it was like Christmas morning when they found out they're going to have a season. But, you know, it's just a long, long time. These teams came together a long time ago. And finally, November 7th, they're going to get in the field. I mean, you could understand they'd be antsy. But I'm curious. I'm curious to see what Oregon looks like with nobody in there, because that's a weird experience. I mean, Autzen Stadium without fans is not Autzen Stadium, but the Ducks and the Cardinals still will be fun for me. It'll probably be one of the marquee games in the conference, and it's in the first weekend.
Can't wait. Chris, thanks for making time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Enjoy it, Paul. Have a great weekend.
You got it. Chris Fowler, some just fascinating comments there.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.